Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Oh, Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna. Is there a book somewhere? No. Chaitanya Charitamrita. No, no, the Chaitanya, the CC. No, that's not it. That's the Bhagavatam. Hold on. Who's local? Who is from Radhadesh who knows these things? And don't point, just give it to me. Well, she's giving the book now, I think. Or whatever. Okay. Thank you very much. Get purified. She hit him with the CC on the head. No, he got the mercy. I can't see what verse number it is, chapter 20, and then 250. Oh, this is chapter 21. Sorry. Uddhava. Huh? This is volume 5, so volume 4. Madhi Lila volume 4. Shall I speak on any verse I like otherwise? I mean, from the book as it is. I mean, if it's not coming, or you want to give me the computer, I'll do it from the computer. No, that's the Bhagavatam. About King Rahugana that we did yesterday. Oh, it is the one. Oh, okay. They changed the dust jacket. That's tricky. Yesterday the Bhagavatam was in here. I never. Huh? Okay. Thank you all very much. I'm sorry for the confusion. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhi Lila, Chapter 20, the Lord instructs Sanatana Goswami, text 250. Pratame kare Krishna purusha avatara shaita purusha haye trivida prakara. I'll just continue because we are late. In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as the Purusha avatars or Vishnu incarnations. These are of three types. Purport. Up to this verse, the many types of expansions have been described. Now the manifestations of the Lord's different potencies will be described. Visnustatrini rupani purusakyani atuvidu ekam tu mahatashaste dvitiyam tvandasam stitam tritiyam sarvabhutasam tani gitvamimuchate. Anyway. Vishnu has three forms called Purusha. The first, Mahavishnu, is the creator of the total material energy, Mahat. The second is Garbhodaksayi, who is situated within each universe. And the third is Kshiradaksayi, who lives in the heart of every living being. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. This verse appears in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita Purva Kanda 33, which has been quoted from the Satvata Tantra. Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnanandana Salakaya Shakshuraminitam Yenatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, it is described in the beginning of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, written by Sanatan Goswami, that Uttara, the mother of Maharaj Parikshit, came just after the Bhagavatam was completed. And she came to her son and she said, "You have now heard all this transcendental mercy, and what about me? So please instruct me on the knowledge that you've heard." But Maharaj Parikshit had been cursed to have only 7 days to live, so he didn't have another 7 days to explain what he had heard. So he gave it in another form, in the form of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Brihad means great, and Bhagavat, the Bhagavat, and Amrita, the nectar, the great nectar of the Bhagavat, or the nectar of the great Bhagavat. And then, later, Rupa Goswami wrote a smaller book called the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. The Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Lagu means light. So, compared to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But we see that the same conclusions are kind of summarized there. The same conclusions of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the same conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in that way, we are simply going here through the explanations of the Srimad Bhagavatam in a summarized form. And in that summarized form, we see how Krishna expands himself into various forms, the Purusha avatars, to deal with cosmic affairs, with the creation, and further, the sustenance of the material energy. As Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu is resting on the Viraja, the river that divides Haridam and Devidam, the spiritual world and the material world. This river is also known as the causal ocean. It is said that the material world is sometimes existing and sometimes not existing. A day of Brahma and a night of Brahma. During the night of Brahma, the material energy is not manifest, and in that stage, the material energy is dissolved. It is said that the three modes of material nature have come into an equilibrium and therefore cease to exist. And at that state, the potential of the material creation remains. And that potential is known as pradana. So when Mahavishnu, when it is time for another day of Brahma, then Mahavishnu glances upon that potential, which then becomes activated. the glands become Shambhu, Sadashiva. From Mahavishnu then emanates Sadashiva, who is still, although the original Shiva, still a Vishnu expansion. And in Sadashiva, that Shambhu Tattva is coming in touch with the material energy, and then Yatadadi Vikara Vishesa Yogat. Then a transformation takes place, and that Sadashiva Tattva transforms into Rudra, or what Prabhupada sometimes refers to as the demigod Shiva, who resides on Kalash, on the material side of the Viraja. So in this way, we see that Krishna himself is not directly involved with the material energy. In the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that point comes up where Krishna says that I am all-pervading, right? I'm present in the entire universe, Jagat Avyakta Murtina, and he also says I'm present within every living being, but they are in me, but I am not in them. Meaning to say that Krishna is independent from this world, that Krishna is not involved with the material energy directly, but rather Krishna does so through his energies. Krishna is only engaged with his internal energy. The devotees, they enter in that realm of internal energy. There are three energies of Krishna, the Antaranga Shakti, Tatastha Shakti, and the Bahiranga Shakti. Antaranga, internal energy, Tatastha, marginal, and Bahiranga, external energy. So, the external energy is the illusory energy, the living being, the marginal energy. Somehow or other, the living being, when turning away from Krishna, begins to take the material energy, the external energy, very serious, and thinks that it's a wonderful world, or thinks it's very important what is happening here, thinks I never want to die, and, you know, life is so good, right? But the reality is that it is never very good in the material world, because the material body is an undesirable thing. Srila Prabhupada, in one lecture, begins to explain about anarthas. Anarthas means unwanted stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual progress. And then he says, the body is an anartha, the whole material body. Of course, one can engage this material body in the service of Krishna, and then it becomes transcended, just like iron that is placed in fire begins to act like fire. So in the same way, a material body, which in itself is of no value at all, is simply a temporary situation where we are limited. In the spiritual world, our capacity to serve is never obstructed. Here in the material world, everything is obstructed. One has an idea of what one's going to do, and then what happens in reality is usually less, right, than what one plans. That is the way it goes in the material world. This is the realm where everything takes great endeavor, and generally the results are limited. Recently we were in South Africa in the Durban Rati Yatra, and we have many question and answer tents, and the question came. Well, let's first say, different swamis are taking on this service, but especially Jayadvaita Maharaj enjoys this question-answer sessions very much and can do it the whole day. And that's what they give him. Right? And the way he does it, is like playing table tennis, you know. A question, boom, smash, next, right? So someone asked a question about what about being gay, and when devotees are gay, is there room for, you know, somewhere, right, for that? And, you know, I mean, what about that? And his answer simply was, you know, whether this sex or that sex, ultimately one has to give it all up. It comes to that, sooner or later. After all, panchachordam vanam vrajet, it is said at the age of 50, one must take vanaprastha. There are four ashrams, and of course in three of these ashrams, sex life is simply given up. But in the grihastha ashram, it is allowed, but one cannot stay in the grihastha ashram. In the other three ashrams, one can stay. One can stay whole life in the brahmacharya ashram, whole life in the sannyasa ashram, well, take sannyasa at birth, but from once taken it. But the grihastha ashram is, at one point, it must transform into the vanaprastha ashram. So, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is an interesting book because the Brihad Bhagavatamrita gives a description about the whole universe. It describes different planetary systems, and it also describes how one is placed in the universe according to how one deals with sexuality. If one engages in illicit sex, one is placed in the lower planetary systems and even hellish planets and so on. If one is very much in the mode of passion and not inclined towards following the rules of Dharma, one takes his birth on planet Earth. And when one is... When therefore the prescribed rules of Dharma look like a great burden and very difficult, then one has a typical conditioning of human birth. Whereas in the higher planetary systems, in the heavenly planets, the natural inclination is towards Dharma. Therefore, sexuality is expressed according to Dharma. So those who are dharmic can become eligible to attain the heavenly planets. Then above these heavenly planets, where there's great enjoyment, are the Maharjana Tapa and Brahmalokas. So in the Maharlokas, we find the Prajapatis. We find descriptions in the Bhagavatam about the Prajapatis. But it's always a little vague. Where are they staying, right? These Prajapatis? I mean, and how long do they live, the Prajapatis? Who are they anyway? But we find that the Prajapatis are residents of Maharloka. And it's said they are basically involved in performing austerities for their purification. And then only for engaging in, for generating procreation, are they engaging in sexual activity. And then above that, the Jana Loka, we find all sages who are celibate. In the Tapa Loka, it is the abode of the Brahmacharis. There the four Kumaras are the presiding deities, and Brahma Loka is the abode of the Sannyasis, and who are there with Brahma, okay, whatever may be. And then, of course, Vaishnava Sannyasis, or any ashram in Vaishnavas can go back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. Bhagavad Gita, furthermore, points out that there is dharma viruddha bhutte su kamusmi bharatar sabha, that there is sexuality according to religious principles. Why am I bringing up this topic? Because this is the one topic that is a problem for us all. There is none of us who is exempt from facing the problem of being pulled down into the material energy by sexual desire. And that is our difficulty, our struggle. And really, if that wasn't there, it would be so much easier, spiritual life. If only that little thing could be overcome. So devotional service is the internal energy of the Lord. It is not of the material world. And therefore it is said, susukam kartumavyam, it is joyfully performed. In the conditioned state we are not yet tasting. It is said like jaundice patients who don't taste sugar, don't taste the sweetness of sugar, they must take sugar, right, as a medicine, and then later they'll be cured, sugar candy. They'll be cured by that sugar candy from their jaundice, and then they can taste the sweetness. So it is devotional service, which becomes more and more relishable. Therefore, one must tivrena bhakti yogena. One must engage in devotional service. It said with great force, with one a serious input. The more we are investing in spiritual life, the more we'll return. And when we find that we are weak, then we should understand that we should make a higher investment in service, and then we'll be stronger. That is the difference. If we are simply getting more serious about hearing, chanting, and other forms of devotional service, then automatically spiritual strength will come. And spiritual strength comes in the form of happiness. You see, it is just the other day we spoke about one who wears the shoes of satisfaction on his feet will not experience the thorns of material existence on his path. Right? So it is like that. That is the key. And that satisfaction comes from trying to do our very best for Krishna. It is natural. When one is really trying to do his best, then one also naturally feels very satisfied. Yeah. Then there is no question of feeling uninspired and empty. It is at that stage that one... Of course, what is one's best today will not be good enough tomorrow. Because it must increase, it must improve in quality. What is the best in the beginning, after a little while, becomes routine. And then we have to go further and still increase the quality of our offering. It's logical. I mean, it's one can see that it makes sense. And this is Krishna's desire. Because Krishna naturally wants, he wants 100%. And he wants everything. Krishna is not satisfied. Is here I have this wonderful offering. Yesterday, the play with the heart, you know, here I'm offering you heart, but I secretly have cut a piece off, which I'm hiding behind my back. Here's my heart. But still hiding a piece. That part didn't come in the series. This heart series of Shamananda has been going on over a number of years now. This was the latest episode. So maybe next year we get a piece of the heart hidden somewhere. It is like that. It is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita described as Hridaya Kandare Vusachinandana. And it is describing the heart as being made of different chambers. And it said that there are the outer chambers of the heart and there are the public chambers. That's where we interact with people and that's what we share. How do you feel? Everything. Sharing with everyone, yes. And then the inner chamber, which we share with no one. With no one. No one. That inner chamber. And it says, in that inner chamber must be Krishna. Because what is in that inner chamber? What are we hiding there? That is the issue. It is that. It is that piece of our heart that we're holding back, the inner chamber. So this is our challenge. So in spiritual life, we are all facing a challenge. We are aiming at a very high goal. We don't want to approach it with fanaticism, that just we are going to try and push ourselves into the most austere situation, because we understand that we have to maintain. So sometimes we take smaller steps, but we should not take a step back. One should not go backwards in spiritual life. Whenever one has accepted a level of higher commitment, then one must maintain. Spiritual life begins with commitment. It is about that. It's not just about, well, even being with the devotees is a commitment, of course. But then it goes further. And then one agrees to voluntarily accept some service and say, all right, I will take this service. And then more. And then it must improve. One must develop the service. First, maybe incidental service, sometimes helping, sometimes doing something. But then comes the point of taking some service and taking responsibility. And then comes a point where one must become generous, not just think, yes, I'll do some service, I'll do a little service here, a little service there, and that's the service I'm doing. I'm on the roster, so please leave me alone. I'm doing service for one must become generous, very generous with himself. Say, oh yes, I'll do this service. Can you do this? Yes, I can do. Yes. Can you do that also? Yes, I can do it also. Of course, there are limits to what we can do, and one must also be intelligent. Maybe you can cook in 10 pots at the same time. Can you cook in 20 pots at the same time? It gets difficult. 40 pots at the same time? It might be that the quality of the cooking goes down. Right? Could happen. So in that way, one must also know when to limit oneself. But the principle of being very generous and somehow or other being prepared to serve, that is our saving grace. Devotional service is manifold. There is a ninefold process of devotional service. Shravanam, hearing, which includes studying scripture, which includes memorizing verses. If you learn a verse, then you keep on hearing that verse again and again. You remember it again and again. It becomes a shelter. So that is very valuable. Chanakya Pandit says, let not a day go by without learning a verse or without learning. If you can't do that, learn half a verse. If not that, learn at least one line of a verse. If you cannot do that, at least one word of a verse. Like that. But expand. So spiritual life is of that nature, the nature to expand. At one point I started to realize that every time I was given some service, that service was the preparation for the next service. I thought, now I'm doing some real service. And then later I got another service and I realized actually what I was doing before, it wasn't the real thing, it was only the preparation. Krishna was just getting me ready, just teaching me a little, of what was to come. And each time it goes like that. It's like I came in Vrindavan and on on the first day, they asked me to help out in the restaurant. And the second day, the manager left and I was in charge of the restaurant. And it went very fast. Right? And it just continued and continued like that. Right? What can I say? It went very quick, and I was looking. I was looking at elders. You know, I was looking like, well, there must be. I'm new, so there must be others who are going to inspire me. Right? Others who are going to go in front of me, and they're going to show an example of surrender, and then that will inspire me to also do something. Yeah? And I can, of course, not surrender as much as they do, but then, you know, sort of in the wake of their surrender, okay, if they surrender 80%, I'll surrender 40%. I thought like that. But it didn't quite happen. And at one point I realized, no, it doesn't really matter how long we've been around. It's just a matter of accepting the responsibility for Krishna, not being miserly about it. Like, well, you know, okay, I'll do a little service. So this is very important. And I have somehow or other I don't know why, but a little bit of inclination towards taking responsibility in my life. Always was. When I was a kid and I would get sick, then when I get a little better, then my mother would ask me to help her clean the house, and then would do like a big cleanup, and then she'd say, okay, stay sick for 2 more days. Yeah, because I would get into it, right? And that was whatever karma that was good fortune, because in spiritual life, if we really take service, just take responsibility in devotional service, that will make all the difference. Devotees who are always sort of hesitating, you know, I can't do it. They don't advance very much. Even someone who is like having difficulty to chant, right? All right, you know, we are not intolerant, so we can tolerate that it can be difficult to immediately go to 16 rounds, but one must go there. One cannot stay on 8. Sorry, right? It's not good enough. 8 means another birth. 8 means missing the boat. 8 means, sorry, you know, we're going to leave you behind. Yeah. For a while, 8 is okay, of course, you know, to warm up and to get there. But 16 rounds is the blessed number. Prabhupada brought it down. It is the back to Godhead number. At a minimum of 16 rounds, we can go back to Godhead. What can I say? I have boxes of tissues for everyone. I have sympathy. And I don't hold hands, but nonetheless, see, I am certainly one to be understanding. Right? I know what it's like to be confronted with weakness. I also have it. Right? I also experience that within me there is weakness. And I also feel that I have to fight it. It is not automatic, you know what I mean? This morning also, somehow or other, I went to bed at 10 last night, and I woke up at 1, and I thought, my God, it's too early, and it's like going to be a really busy day. I should sleep more. And I just couldn't sleep. And I started to think, oh no, Krishna, you want me to get up? Anyway, by 1:25, I did it. I surrendered. Was okay, I guess. I hope. At least I chanted Hare Krishna, which is a good thing to do on a day like today. So we have to see what Krishna wants from us. Krishna comes to us through the Vaishnavas. Sometimes Krishna also directly will reveal something to us. And it is like that. We must accept what the Vaishnavas are offering us. We should not let it go by, this opportunity. It comes very rarely. So, most of you here now are my disciples. So, we somehow or other have a bond which cannot be broken. Right? It's like no matter what is done, we cannot break it. That bond is there. Right? It's that powerful. In marriage, one can have a divorce, but not from a guru-disciple relationship. One may externally walk away from it, but that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't relieve us at all from the vow. So it is a very serious bond, both ways. And we are on the way back to Godhead. That is what we are doing. And well, my plan is this lifetime, somehow or other. And of course, we are all individuals. When it comes to individualism, I am into it. I am into being an individual. It's like when I see, like, I saw a picture of a million Buddhists who were all sitting in meditation and they all looked the same. The Hare Krishna movement, we will never make it. Right? No way. You know, it's not possible. Right? Because we are a movement of individuals. Right? And we are developing our individuality, and that's what it's about. It's not about oppression. It's not that we all have to be the same and stereotype. Certain things are the same. Once I was in South Africa, and there was a program with all kinds of teachers from very esoteric backgrounds. And there was one lady, and she asked a question, and she said, "Why is it that when you go into the temple that you have to take off your shoes?" So I said, "Well, it's a matter of respect, a matter of cleanliness, the temple, you know, it's the house of the Lord." So she said, "Oh, I thought that it was to catch the earth rays through the chakras on your feet." She went like, she was really disappointed. You know. And then, you know, there was a couple, they were teachers, middle-aged, they were teachers in primordial screaming. I don't know if you heard of the primordial scream, but they were explaining it, and I'm familiar with it. Basically, the point is that everyone has a fundamental sound, a fundamental scream, right? And it's different for each individual. And if you just find that scream, right, when you scream from deep down in the heart, you'll be liberated. That's basically what they were saying. And so I told them that that's far out. I said, "That's amazing that you are like into sound as a means of self-realization." It's like it totally connects, you know, totally connects to like what we are doing. Said like, because with us, you know, it's also all about sound. And said like, but you know, we are all chanting the same sound, but everybody does it
in his own individual way. And they were like, oh. But to tell you the truth, I am with them on that one. I also want to do it in my own way, spiritual life. I want to do it in my own way, but not foolishly in my own way. I also want to learn from those who have better ways than me. And if I could learn from them and adjust what I am doing to the better ways of greater devotees, then yes, oh yes. Like I'm the first one to go on the barrier, on the anti-authority barrier, in a sense. I'm after all from the Netherlands, what can I do, right? But when it comes to spiritual authority, right, then of those who know better, right, oh yes, then I'll be the first one, hopefully. At least, anyway, I hope I'll be there with the ones. Maybe not the first one, but I hope I'll be there with the ones to submit. So one has to know, you know, the balance between taking shelter of authority and yet being an individual. I remember a time when this sense of individuality was not always so understood within our movement, and when the idea was that everyone had to be the same. And I remember that they told us, don't think, ask your authority, which with me doesn't work because it doesn't stop, you know, it goes on, right? I can't switch it off, it's always on, the thinking. Rather than only following authority, we must assimilate the good instructions and then see how we can apply it in our own life. No one can do that for us. It is our life. We have to, and we have to find the way. If I, in a very liberal way, sort of paraphrase the last word of Francis of Assisi, then you could paraphrase it to, I gave you everything, now find your own way. Which is like a nice consideration, that everyone has to, on its own, embrace this transcendental instructions from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the parampara, from the spiritual masters, from the advanced Vaishnavas, and take all that good instructions and then fit it into our life and make a life that makes sense for us. No one can build someone else's spiritual life. We must build it ourselves. The building blocks, yes, we can get. We can get from the minds of the revealed scriptures. But we ourselves must construct a spiritual life. And that is the responsibility we have to take. And this is what we see. You know, when on a day like today, on these Vyasa Puja festivals, you're looking at a room full of people, and you see a percentage of very enthusiastic new people. There's a group that are going to take initiation and so on a day like today and really are ready to commit themselves. You see some brahmacharis in like saffron, which is, you know, suitable for the Queen's Day, and one needs like some orange sunglasses to deal with it. It's the kirtans are explosive and full of fired up energy and so on. And then I think of those who are not here. Because I'm sitting here, I'm also looking who didn't come. I'm not just looking who came. I'm looking, okay, oh, this one didn't come. Oh, a few years ago, this one was really jumping up front. And this year, didn't come. Had to work. Okay. A few years ago, hell or high water that person came. It is like that, right? And we all are experiencing like that. I'm looking at Krishna Kshetra, who is my senior in all respects, in that he joined this movement way before me. He's had more association of exalted Vaishnavas than me. He has, anyway, he's been in this guru business longer than me. So, but I think he knows what I'm talking about. He's nodding, which could mean yes, or he's falling asleep, or something. But I think it means a confirmation. So yes, we must somehow or other... Now, I am not saying that everyone has to always, up till the age of 80, jump up and down with the same enthusiasm that the 20-year-olds are having. I mean, that I'm not saying. And it's not that you can never stay home and that it's a mortal sin if you haven't come. But the relationship has to remain always fresh and has to be renewed again and again. And that tendency is there to sort of drift a little bit aside from that wholehearted commitment to the spiritual master. It's not casual, right? It's not about a button on the beatback, right? It goes a lot deeper. It's not just about, yes, I am following my spiritual master. It is about a really trying hard to invest in that relationship. That's the one thing that's going to make it happen. That is the one thing that will, that's the tipping point in spiritual life, where one goes from bhakti without nectar to bhakti with nectar, which is a division made by Kavi Karnapur, which I like. Because I think it's crucial. And once there's bhakti with nectar, yes, then it becomes easier and easier. So today I'm kind of trying to inspire that, yes, we must try to increase a commitment. I often explain that it doesn't need to be a very big thing. It doesn't necessarily need to be the thing that is the most difficult. Just add something that's easy. Do a little thing that's sort of easy to do and add that. And then do another little thing that is easy to do. Because if we do many things that are relatively easy and we tighten up our commitment in these easier areas, then suddenly we find that that gives us the strength to make bigger commitment. It is like that, you see. So if there is a big hurdle which we cannot overtake, then start to do things, start to increase our commitment. That is necessary. That is the ultimate point for all of us, to go beyond our point of weakness. Recently I've somehow or other coined this phrase, the point of weakness, and that every devotee comes to his point of weakness in spiritual life. No matter how strong we are, we have our point of weakness. And then, what do you do then? So, at that stage, we have to try and broaden our commitment, somehow or other increase our commitment, maybe in smaller areas, but in that way. So today it's kind of natural that I express this desire, because it is my desire that we all go back to God at this lifetime, I must say so. That's really what I what I would like from the initiation. That's what I like. I would like from this relationship. That's why I'm traveling around. That's why I'm sitting with you, joking with you, singing with you, dancing with you, and doing all these things I'm doing. Right, I'm doing it for with that in mind, that somehow or other I have that desire that we go back to Godhead this lifetime. I say, yeah, well, but that may be, thank you, very difficult. That may be very difficult. But it is not that we will ever do this on our own strength. The famous story of the sparrow that lost its eggs in the ocean is very relevant for all of us, because the ocean wouldn't return the eggs, and the sparrow said, I will drink your water. The ocean didn't even bother to reply. But Garuda came because Garuda felt touched by this determination, and then Garuda came to the ocean, said, so, you've got those eggs, and okay, and just return them right now, or I will drink your water. So, of course, the ocean understood who he was dealing with and said, yes, Mr. Garuda, of course, Mr. Garuda, here are the eggs, Mr. Garuda, and anything else, Mr. Garuda. We should understand what basically is going on there is that this sparrow, who didn't have the power, right, by making the endeavor, the sincere endeavor, attracted Garuda, who then by superior power did it. So in the same way, we don't have the power on our own strength to become pure devotees. We can't do that. But by making this endeavor, we'll attract Krishna. We'll attract Krishna. And then Krishna starts to help us. And he starts throwing out the anarthas, and suddenly it becomes all very possible. What was impossible becomes possible. Therefore, one should never approach spiritual life from the point of view of a mundane calculation. You know, I'm from the Netherlands, and in the Netherlands it is totally flat and a lot of land below sea level, and they sort of keep it artificially dry by pumping. But basically, if you come to Amsterdam by plane, what you see is a square piece or a rectangular piece of grass with a little canal around it, and then another piece of grass with a little canal around it, and it's just like that, you know, everywhere these little canals, right? So when we were kids, right, we used to go into the fields, and we used to go and jump over the canals. And then you got the little ones, like 2 meters. That's kid stuff, right? But then you got the big ones, you know. In Friesland, where our Rupa Sanatan is from, they have big canals, even of 10 meters. And these guys, they go with a big pole. They run with the pole, and they put it in the water, and then and they climb up, and then they make it to the other side. 10 meters, yeah, serious. We can see if Rupa can do it. What's it called again? Filiappen. Yeah, Filiappen. That's what it's called. Anyway, we're jumping over these canals in the Netherlands, you know, like, so, you know, when you're a serious guy, you come, and you just jump over 4 meters, you know, and then the other ones, they stand on the other side and look at you, and they're not jumping, right? Because everyone's calculating what he can do. So in spiritual life, we also tend to calculate and think, well, 3 meters I can do, 4 maybe, but 5, no way. Like this, we calculate. I can surrender to this, I cannot surrender to that. But what we forget is that Krishna is an active agent, and that Krishna will make it all possible. Right. Krishna will just pull us up if we simply make that endeavor. So we should not think, I cannot do it. Now that I'm on the north of Holland, right? In the north of Holland, they say, cannot is dead. and lies on the cemetery, and want not is lying next to him. Right? That's like, my mother is from the north, you know. She used to say it all the time. In Dutch, you know, kan niet is dood en wil niet ligt naast hem op het kerkhof. So, yeah. Mens. Well, anyway, but there is truth in this matter, right? We should not worry so much. We can do, because Krishna is there and will make it possible. Now, I wish I could stretch the time, because it's getting 9:15, so it's getting late. So if there's one question or comment, then that is welcome. And whoever is quick on the draw or very determined. Obeying the GBC. Obeying the GBC, obeying spiritual authority. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think one can boil it down to that. I think it has to be on a higher level of maturity. I think that the GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON and should be respected like that. But it doesn't mean that we should just blindly obey. Sometimes the GBC can make a mistake. And then if we have some experience, then we, in a respectful way, can bring it to their notice. So I don't think one can simplify it so much by saying, like a sloka, you know. No, it's not like that. Of course, when we are very new and inexperienced, we should just do what the senior devotees say, and they're guided by the GBC body. But the GBC being the ultimate managing authority is also accountable, right? They're accountable to the body of Vaishnavas. There may be a governing body, but there's also a body of Vaishnavas. So there's a reciprocation. Of course, they are managing. And if everyone wants to manage, it becomes a problem. Right? Just like when you drive in the car, you let the driver drive. And when there's three co-drivers who tell him, no, then he goes, it gets too much. Right? So we cooperate, right? But we must still be awake and use our own intelligence to judge what is there. And when we see that something may not be right, we may not just obey. We may bring this out for discussion and say something is not going well. I think that is required. Yeah, Prabhupada said, we need devotees who are independently thoughtful. Yeah? So I'm not preaching revolution. Yeah? Don't translate that I'm preaching revolution. Yeah? I'm preaching that we should cooperate, that we should certainly work together and accept the leadership in our movement. But how did you phrase it again? I forgot how you said it. Yeah. Obey. You said obey. Yeah. You said it literally. What did you say literally? Yeah. The answer is no. Not necessarily. At times, yes. Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, no. Yeah. I know that's confusing. It means that we have to use our intelligence. But we must... that doesn't mean that we have to question everything that is there. Yeah. But the way you phrase it, it sort of means switch off the intelligence and just obey. And that, I think, is not what Srila Prabhupada wanted. Srila Prabhupada wants us to remain independently thoughtful. That is my point. Naturally, the GBC is our qualified people who are organizing, trying to organize an unorganized movement. Very difficult, right? You know, very difficult to organize the Vaishnavas. So they are making a great sacrifice, and we respect them for that. Yeah, I would ask, you know, my disciples to please be very cooperative, right, and be generous, right, in this regards, and you know, and help Prabhupada's ISKCON, right, and do something for that, and in this way cooperate with the GBC. But also, when quite a large number of people see that maybe an idea of the GBC is not a good idea, then there's nothing wrong in not being so enthusiastic about that. Yeah, you see, that's all right. We have that right. Yeah, that's fine. That's okay. So we can be independently thoughtful, and we can express ourselves when we have different opinions. But we're not gonna make a revolution, right? And we're not gonna under ordinary circumstances, not. No, that would be under very extreme circumstances, possibly. Yeah. We are cooperative. So we have to judge. We have to judge the situation. Generally follow, but judge for yourself also what is right, what is wrong. We have the scriptures, we have Srila Prabhupada, we have clear understanding of what to do, what not to do. I can't, you know, although I respect our GBC, although I cooperate with the GBC, right, but I cannot say that I am 100% in agreement with the GBC. It's impossible. I couldn't be, right? I'm an individual. I have some ideas of my own. And everyone can have that. But I am also not living in a mundane situation where I, you know, am always criticizing the government. I'm ready to cooperate with the government and let them do, you know, like that. In that mood, I'm a cooperative member of the society. Yeah, but... yeah, we must be thoughtful. Yeah. Might take my words literally as an authorization for divorce. I mean, Punatattva, if you want to take my lecture and if you want to cut and paste, right, you can do anything with my lecture. Yeah, you can say that I authorized anything and everything. It obviously is not an endorsement. It means that it's not, marriage is not eternal. I'm sorry to break the romance, but it's not eternal. Marriage is like a support situation. It's like a secondary vow. It's like we are taking our initiation vows as primary vows and they are essential for our going back to Godhead. Then, if we have some material entanglement in terms of desires, all right, we get married and create a support situation. But just getting married will not take us back to Godhead. Yeah? So, in that way, marriage is only a secondary vow. It is the initiation vow that is the essence. And that's what I really meant. Yeah, and that GBC issue, well, you know, what can I say? Now I've set this heavy thing on my Vyasa Puja. So I really want everyone to, in this regards, not only to listen to my words, but to listen to my moods and to follow in my footsteps and to see how I've spent a life in dedication to ISKCON and worked as a loyal member of ISKCON, right? So that's what I would like to say also. I would recommend, let us always remain loyal members of ISKCON, because I think that's what Prabhupada desired from us. Yeah, very much so. And in that context, it's okay to not always agree with the GBC. Thank you very much. I think now it's time for breakfast. You shouldn't ask a Dutchman such questions in public. Anyway, what to do? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
If you get in trouble, I'll come.
Thank you.